and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
And support for WMNF comes from our members and Goodwill. The annual book drive for Goodwill's childhood literacy program, Bookworks, is now underway. Donations of children's books labeled for Bookworks will be accepted at any Goodwill store or donation site now through March 15th. Goodwill will make sure they are given to children who may not otherwise have books of their own. More at goodwill-suncoast.com. .org.
WMNF is a listener-supported community radio station that celebrates cultural diversity and is committed to equality, peace, and economic justice. WMNF provides broadcasts and other forums with a grassroots local emphasis that promotes creative, musical, and political vitality. WMNF advocates for peace, social justice, and environmental justice through independent media and programming neglected by the mainstream. We embrace diversity, tolerance for others' opinions, and freedom of expression. WMNF celebrates and promotes the cultural, creative, and political vitality of the local community. We're your community-conscious radio station, WMNF Tampa.
And good afternoon. You are listening to WMNF. This is 88.5 FM, community radio from West Central Florida. And welcome to executive session here, kicking off a Monday. We're going to be here Monday through Thursday at this time. This is a forum for discussion of the executive branch of your United States government. My name is John Gilmore, and I host the sessions each weekday, Monday through Thursday. In this conversation, we welcome all viewpoints. We require civility, kind of like you would if you were talking to your neighbor over the back fence, because that's the basic stance that we take. Radio is still the back fence of the nation, which is to say reasonable people can talk and hash out the issues of the day and walk away enriched, even if they still don't agree. You can join the conversation at 813-239-9663. That'll get you in contact this afternoon with Mr. Frank Knox, who will take your name, get you ready to step in here and have your say. You can reach the studio by email at dj@wmnf.org and by text at 813-433-0885. Take a look at the Executive Session Facebook page. Like and follow it, and you can see the material that we use. We post links to that material each day, and there's also sometimes discussion there. So, Monday, was it a relatively quiet weekend? General question, what got your attention since we buckled up on Thursday? Let's start with a little something that could conceivably bust the world economy, shall we? This is from Reuters. President Donald Trump today will ask lawmakers to hike spending for the military and the wall he wants to build on the U.S.-Mexico border and slash other programs in his 2020 budget, the opening move in his next funding fight with Congress. The Republican president's proposals, slated for release today at 11:30, as we already know, is expected to be rejected by Congress, where Democratic leaders yesterday warned the president against what they called a, quote, repeat performance of last year's funding war, which led to a five-week partial shutdown of the federal government. This year, the stakes are higher. The October 1st deadline for a funding, the October 1st deadline for a funding deadline to keep the government running coincides with the deadline to lift the debt limit. Now, if we don't, let me finish the quote, without which the U.S. government would risk a default, which would shock the world economy. Now, here is Frank Luntz on, the PBS NewsHour yesterday, talking to Hari Srinivasan.
Tomorrow, the White House will release its proposed 2020 budget. And according to senior administration officials, it will include a request for $8.6 billion for new funding to build more sections of a wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. This is in addition to more than $6.5 billion President Trump has already ordered, redirected from federal agencies for border security. Even before the details about a spending for a border wall emerged, Democrats called the president's budget a non-starter. For perspective on the battle between the White House and Congress and the 2020 presidential campaign, we turn to Republican strategist Frank Luntz. Where are voters on the wall right now?
It's interesting that that phrase, a non-starter, that's part of the problem. That's not part of the solution. The goal in this, the mission in all of this, is to find things that every American can support and find that common ground between us. Mm-hmm. And no one is seeking it anymore. The president continues to call it a wall. 40% of Americans support it, which means a majority don't. But a majority do support a barrier. The public does not want to support Donald Trump's position, but they want border security. And if you combine a barrier and human intelligence and technology, you're up in the mid-70s.
Of people who would support it.
Of people who would support it, because to them, that's genuine border security. It's not politics.
So the distinction made between politics and border security, and the distinction the American public apparently is making between a wall and border security, that they don't support a wall, they do support border security, and they're not interested in having a wall. So, what do you think about this? We have we've discussed this a little bit in earlier sessions, and if there is a point that you didn't make or a point that you want to make subsequent to whatever else it was that you said, give us a call at 813-239-9663. And then there is this from Fox 10 in Phoenix. Quote, the U.S. government kept a database on journalists, activists, organizers, and, quote, instigators, unquote, during an investigation into last year's migrant caravan, infuriating civil liberties and media groups who called it a blatant violation of free speech rights. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection compiled information that contained passport photos, dates of birth, suspected roles in the caravan, and whether they had been arrested. The database was revealed this past week, Wednesday, by the San Diego TV station KNSD. When the government, and it turns out, and now we're outside the quote here, it turns out that some of those journalists were denied passage through ports of entry because their passports had been flagged. So when the government tries to control the movements of journalists covering a major story, what do you have? Let's talk.
Boy, the way Glenn Miller played.
Songs that made the hit parade.
Guys like us, we had it made.
Those were the days. And you knew when you were there.
Dance for girls and men, woman. Mister, we could use a man like Herbert Hoover again. Didn't need no welfare state.
Everybody pulled his weight.
G.R.O. was sour and great. Those were the days.
And we're in session here this week, and specifically today, this Monday, this very, very nice Monday. I hope that you are at least enjoying the weather, if not the fact that it is Monday. And you can reach us at 239-9663. We were talking about the fact that the president has released a budget. Now, we have some additional information about this because, let's see, who is this? NPR published an article at 11:46 just after the budget was released. The Trump is also calling for a 5% boost in military spending along with deep cuts to domestic programs and foreign aid. The president's budget calls for a 23% cut in State Department funding. Those are our diplomats, ladies and gentlemen. The people that go over to talk to folks, and the general outcome is intended to be talk, not guns. 23% cut in State Department funding, a 15% cut in spending by the United States Department of Agriculture, a 31% cut in the budget for the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, the EPA is a department that was put together by Richard Nixon that has been dealing with pollution and environmental protection for lo these many years. There seems to be a substantial hostility to the Environmental Protection Agency in this administration. And it says here, according to NPR, the budget for Homeland Security would increase by 7.4%. So that's an initial look at what it is that we're dealing with as far as the budget is concerned, and also the fact that the deficits, the debt, continues to build and somewhere near $1 trillion. So we have already seen something like an 18% increase in the debt over the last couple of years, despite the tax bill that the administration and Congress passed that was supposed to be a major stimulus. And the employment figures look good, and a lot of wage figures look good, and the debt seems to be climbing rapidly. Now, the Republicans used to be very, very sensitive about debt, and I wonder what you think about, if you are one of those kind of traditional Republicans and you have something to say about this current Republican Party as contrasted perhaps with the Republican Party with which you have been affiliated, by all means, give us a call at 813-239-9663 and let us know what it is that you see. And we're going to start off with Danny. Danny, good afternoon. You're in executive session and you knew it.
Yeah, good afternoon, John. Not a Republican, but a Democrat, but that's okay.
Uh-huh. Well, that's okay. We let Democrats in here too.
Oh, good, good. Sounds a lot like, they talked a lot about the debt with Obama there and all the deficit. And now Trump is just putting it higher and higher. Sounds a lot like that. The budget sounds a lot like the Reagan administration.
Mm-hmm.
It's just typical Republican. Every 4 years, it's just a continuation. It's basically a lot of the trickle down theory. You know, the same thing that Reagan's been doing.
Yeah.
You know, the economic system and all that, and the economic plan. And it's just as far as like detaining some of the, not letting the journalists go through. That's fascist right there. That's in my opinion. You know, this morning, I heard Glenn Greenwald this morning on Democracy Now! Talking about, not praising Maduro, but talking about how Marco Rubio and these people lied. They said that there was a big fire and explosion. It was Maduro's people. It was not Maduro's people. It was, how about that?
It was the anti-government folks that managed to lob a Molotov cocktail up in there and start
exactly. And also about the babies dying in the hospitals and stuff like that. And you know, like I said, we're not praising Maduro, but you know, Glenn Greenwald. I'll tell you what, he was back to the old Glenn Greenwald. I've seen him on Fox a couple of times with Tucker Carlson. And with Sean Hannity, and I'm like, whoa, what the hell? Not that he praised Trump, but he sure seemed like Hannity and Tucker Carlson had no problem with him whatsoever. So I was like, you know. So you know, with Glenn Greenwald, I was like, well, I sounded like the old Glenn Greenwald this morning. But I tell you, you know, I don't know if you've heard now, but you know, catching up with some of the stuff. Have you heard about Jeanine Pirro?
Yeah, I heard about ex-Judge Jeanine Pirro and her remarks about the freshman congressman from Minnesota.
Yes, Ilhan Omar, who's been getting a lot of publicity, is saying, talking about the hijab, and Fox scolded her for it. She's not apologizing, and Tucker Carlson himself now has to uh, something that he said 10 years ago that was anti-women and very, 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 just meaning, you know, very despicable towards women, and some comments that he made there, he's not backing off either, so they've both been scolded. Also, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I don't know if you heard it, she compared Roosevelt to the New Deal to fascism.
I see. You know, I saw that. I was fascinated at that. I saw it was FDR and who else? FDR and somebody else that she...
Somebody else.
And it was, I was in the middle of something else. I was scanning through some headlines and I saw that. And my initial reaction was, what? So I got to, you know, I got to go back and look at that.
She did say a couple, in an interview though, this morning, she did say a couple of things about capitalism that in my opinion, rang true about how basically beat me. But what she was saying, basically how it's just discriminatory against black people and, you know, capitalism and white people profit from it more. What she's saying basically is...
Well, I'll tell you what, Danny, let me stop you for a second because mm-hmm. capitalism... Mm-hmm. All capitalism is an economic system.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, capitalism doesn't care. Capitalism, the economic system, doesn't care who's operating it. Now, there are people who do, and there are folks who rise high up in the power structure who do. But I don't think that you can say capitalism itself.
No,
the economic system.
Ethical capitalism.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. As far as I can tell, there is no ethics in capitalism. Capitalism is, as far as I can tell, utterly amoral. It isn't immoral. It just doesn't have any.
Okay. And let me answer this. Is there any profit? Is there any morality in making a profit?
No. I don't think there's a problem in making a profit. I think that there's I think that there are ways of making a profit with which I would have some very, very clear disagreements.
Oh yeah.
But the mere fact that you took a resource, converted it into a product, and sold it for somewhat more than it took you than it cost you to do that, I don't have a problem with that.
I remember some capitalists back in the hippie days in the 60s where they sold a bag for got a bag for $15 and sold it for $20 and made $5. So that's being enough to go right there.
Yeah, I don't want to throw us off a cliff here, but I got to tell you that I don't think the average drug dealer is going to argue much with capitalism. It's just,
That's true. But, you know, I think if you look at unethical capitalism, what Karl Marx said about capitalism, basically what he said was, is the people who work for people who work and compared to the slavery, they get peanuts.
Mm-hmm.
And the top people get all the
yeah.
gravy.
Well, it's been the
problem for years and years and years.
Yeah, the system is designed, as far as I can tell, for a couple of major purposes, and one of them, the corporation, is designed to shield individual liability.
Yes,
and to create wealth for the owners,
mm-hmm.
the board. And upper management and shareholders.
That's right.
And so that's the basic operation of the thing, as far as I can tell. Now, there is no question that you can do that if the people who comprise the corporation operate within a moral structure or within an ethical structure. That's exactly. them, and I think that's wonderful. But as far as just plain capitalism, and I think Marx, as you have pointed out, had some valid criticisms of the way he saw capitalism being operated.
Operated, exactly. I couldn't agree with you more. Listen, let me leave you with this. Manafort, as we know, got 47 months, and now I heard, I was talking to Frank. Frank was telling me he heard that he doesn't want a pardon. And, so that, you know, I'm just still trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to figure it out with this guy.
Listen,
if he has something on Trump or if he didn't, or if he didn't, or if he, you know, why if he did, why wouldn't he give it up? And then and then the judge. I don't know. It just seems weird. And now he's facing 10 years and with this other judge. Yeah. Well, and also, you hear where Schiff wants, Adam Schiff says that Mueller should get Trump under oath.
I'll tell you what, Danny, as far as Manafort is concerned, and this is, and I'm going to leave you with this. This is a deep conspiracy. This is what paranoia looks like. Paul Manafort, I believe, may be keenly aware that he has become a liability for Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
And he may have noticed the outcome of being a liability for Vladimir Putin.
That's the only thing I could think of. I'm right there with you. That's what I've been thinking.
All right, Danny. Gotcha. And thank you for kicking us off on Monday, and you and I will talk again.
Thank you, John. You have a great week.
Sure enough. 813-239-9663. David in Clearwater, good afternoon. You are in executive session, and you have the floor.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome very much.
I just want to be sure we start out the right way here, because we're talking about the president's budget.
Yeah.
And there's some mention of the deficit.
Yeah.
And the president's attributing that to Obama and Obamacare. I just wanted to remind everybody that at the time George Bush, the second, went into office, Clinton somehow, with all of his immorality,
yeah,
had managed to get a $1 billion surplus, $1 trillion surplus.
I don't know how much it was, but I know he crossed that line into the black.
Well, we had a surplus because as soon as the president Bush went into office, he sent everybody a check through Republican form. Don't you remember that? Everybody got $300. If you paid taxes, you got a check for $300.
Oh, is it that sweet?
So they sent me $300, and I spent it. Of course.
Of course you did.
I'm a Democrat. I just want to mention one of, and that's the genesis of this, and the Iraqi war off the books, which was always off the budget.
Yeah,
built this up.
Not only the Iraqi war, but a couple of tax cuts and a giant prescription drug program.
That's true.
Were all kept off the books during the Bush administration, and when the Obama administration took over the seat there, you know, got in the seat, why, all of a sudden, there was the debt from the Iraq War, two tax cuts, and a prescription drug program that all of a sudden got put on the books.
Exactly.
And, you know, when people point out that the debt increased dramatically under Obama, I say, yes, if I buy a house, two cars, and a boat, and don't put it in the budget until until you're the bookkeeper.
Right.
You know, it's going to look like you made some very bad decisions.
One other point, that is, the corporation was developed, grew up as a way to amalgamate capital, a way to put, for you and me and 50 of your listeners, to put our money into a pot and draw it out.
Mm-hmm.
Not draw it out, but use it for a business purpose to build a business, so that you could take advantage of things like quantity discounts, or you could deal with people that built big machines that would make little items that you then sold. It's not exactly the same purpose, but the purpose of savings and loans and credit unions was the same. It was everybody, a small, homogenous group.
Mm-hmm.
Put their money together and lend money to those of the group that wanted to build houses. That was what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're all super banks, too big to fail.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Now we got Elizabeth Warren out there going, if a company exceeds $25 billion in net worth, it ought to be split up, and that a company that size should not be allowed to promote its own products. That you're getting into some pretty tricky regulation there, and
you're getting into socialism when you do that.
Socialism is classical socialism. The kind of socialism that Marx described was the state ownership of the means of the state ownership, not regulation, but ownership of the means of production and distribution. So okay. when the government, I realized that there is always this conflict dynamic between capitalism and the interests of government, where the government is trying to protect consumers to a certain point, and the corporations are trying to make a profit. And yep. there are some things that the government doesn't want the corporations to be able to do in order to pursue profit, like, say, opening up fake bank accounts for people.
Yes.
You know, stuff like that. So there's always a struggle. There's always this struggle between capitalism, because if you let capitalism go unregulated, oh, it gets tough quick.
Well, I agree with you, except... You have to factor morality into it.
Well, that's what we're talking about with Danny about, yeah. You know, if there are people who run a corporation ethically, that's fine. But there's nothing in the structure of the corporation or in the structure of capitalism that infers morality in any way.
That's true.
So, you know, that's what we're looking at. And I'm a big fan of capitalism. I think capitalism is probably the finest system for fostering innovation and rewarding entrepreneurism and initiative that anybody has ever thought of, you know? And it needs to be regulated because otherwise it gets exploitive and consumptive and destructive. And sooner or later, it gets to be cannibalistic.
Well, I think if you go back to the beginning, it was not that somebody developed it. It was that somebody analyzed what was happening. Adam Smith, and he wrote about it, and the labels that got attached were the labels of capitalism.
Mm.
Marx, of course, was everything was together, and that's why communism.
Yeah. Well, I think Marx describe socialism as a step out of capitalism, and it's the interim step to communism.
A necessary step, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that. See, I ain't going there.
No.
Regardless of the accuracy of his analysis, that's as far as I go with that.
Well, again, we're all humans, and so there are always going to be variations on everything that's set up as a system.
Yeah.
It's just a way like this.
Yep.
And so you got to work within it, and I think you're right. I agree with you that capitalism is the system, but when you have capitalism and you have an unrestricted capitalism, then you've got a need that the people have for some kind of protection.
Sure.
Protection of the people means government.
Yeah.
Government protection means cost. Cost means taxes.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I have to turn in my Republican card.
Well, you know, it's true. Regulation is expensive. If you have to treat the waste from the process by which you make your products, it's more expensive than if you can just dump it in the river.
That's true.
So regulations are costly. There's no doubt about it. And there is that constant struggle that we find that we're in to keep the balance between the vitality of capitalism and protecting the people, the country, the environment, and all like that. All right, Donald, listen, David, I'm sorry. I appreciate your call. It's been a very interesting conversation, and I hope that we get to talk again.
I hope you know.
Sure enough. 813-239-9663. A quick step away from the business of the discussion and a little bit of information about who else supports your community radio station with you. And we'll be right back. Support for WMNF comes from our members and Happy Feet Plus for those having foot, leg, knee, and back pain. Happy Feet Plus offers footwear solutions fashioned to make your feet happy and is a full-service shoe store, including a complimentary foot scan analysis at their 10 Bay Area locations.
Ike Riley, star of Tropical Heatwave and longtime WMNF favorite, is returning to Tampa and the Attic in Ybor City on March 28th.
She haunts my house.
You don't want to miss the show opener at 8 p.m., Siobhan Philidor.
It's time to let go.
That's Ike Riley at the Attic in Ybor City, Thursday night, March 28th. Capacity is limited, so get your tickets now at WMNF.org.
All right. Started off this morning or this afternoon, we were talking about the president's budget that was just released this morning at 11:30, and how the Democratic leaders have basically called it pretty much dead on arrival, based on the cuts that the president has outlined and the further insistence on money for a fixed structure along the border. And so we're going to go back to the telephone, and you can reach us, by the way, at 813-239-9663. If you have not heard your viewpoint, by all means, pick up the phone and give us a call. If you have experience that you would like to share about the subjects at hand, we're also talking about the fact that Fox 10 in Phoenix is reporting that the U.S. government kept a database on journalists, activists, organizers, and quote, instigators during an investigation into last year's migrant caravan. What do you think of the American government of U.S. Customs and Border Protection compiling information that contains passport photos, dates of birth, suspected roles in the caravan, and such information as that, and that some reporters apparently had their movements restricted by the fact that their passports had been flagged in this database. And we're going to go and talk to Mike in Tampa. Good afternoon, Mike. You're in executive session, and you have the floor.
Yeah, you were talking with Danny about Venezuela and how it was the anti-government people that logged the Molotov cocktail you said into the electric grid.
Mm. No, not into the electric grid. There was apparently I don't know how many, but there were vehicles that were supposed to be carrying humanitarian relief supplies. And they were burned. And there has been a considerable amount of argument about exactly who burned those. The Maduro government apparently closed the border, and they were accused of burning the trucks. And now there is apparently a substantial analysis that indicates that it was... And it could have possibly only been one person who threw a Molotov cocktail up in there and started that thing on fire.
Uh-huh. And that had something to do with electric power outages?
I don't know. You know, I have not read an awful lot about the electric power outage, except that that it's persistent and that there is now a substantial amount of suffering coming out of it.
Yeah, well, the government said that it was the anti-government people had sabotaged the power.
Yeah.
That's why it was caused the power to go out. And Guaido was blaming Maduro.
Yeah.
But one thing I noticed, too, is that actually Venezuela has a... two-thirds of the economy in Venezuela is private. One-third is run by the government.
Wait, just a second. Let me make sure I understood that. Two-thirds of what is private?
the economy.
Oh, okay, got it.
So actually, Venezuela is a capitalist country.
Mm-hmm.
You always talk about being Marxist, being socialist, and all that, but 2/3 of the economy is probably one. That's a capitalist country.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of myth, mythology about Venezuela. Venezuela is more of a liberal, progressive, full regulation, country with a lot of social programs.
Mm.
And the, powers that be, the opposition in Venezuela and the Trump administration, they don't even want that.
Well, you know, this stretches back, and I think that it seems to me that we were relatively comfortable with Venezuela up until the point of Hugo Chavez.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that, I also think that if you look around Central and South America and even the Caribbean, you will find that any place where a socialist government rises, the United States hostility rises right after it.
Yeah, that's true. You look at hostility in the United States, Cuba, you see that.
Yeah.
You were in Nicaragua, and the Sandinistas, and what we did there.
Mm-hmm.
You see that. But in Venezuela, it's called socialist, and it has some socialist tendencies, and some people can say it would be a load to socialism, but it's not. It's not socialist. It's a capitalist, more liberal, social democratic, progressive state. And the Trump administration and the Venezuelan opposition, they don't want any more bad. They just want wall capitalism.
Well, that's the thing. We have the word socialist being coming to our lexicon fundamentally out of Marx. Was associated with being a step toward communism, and also the fact that they are advocating the state owns production and distribution, and we now have got to try and distinguish that from what has come to be called democratic socialism, where people decide that they want to employ the collective funding of their state to social problems.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically what democratic socialism is. You're not relinquishing control of your government, and you're not relinquishing control of your industry. You are allowing the government to administer certain things because there are, by the way, things, and you know this as well as I do, there are a few things that government does better than private industry because they don't have the excess cost of profit.
Right. Capitalism will always produce people like Trump.
Well, yeah.
And if it wasn't Trump, it'd be another Trump. Somebody else like Trump.
Well, let's put it this way. There has never been a shortage of hustlers. So... It's not too terribly surprising. You know, I think you're right. I think that it's not surprising that Mr. Trump would have arisen out of a capitalist society,
yeah.
You know, or out of a capitalist economy. So, yeah, I think so.
Mm.
All right. Listen, Mike, Okay. Thanks a lot. It has been a pleasure to talk with you. We will talk again, sir.
Okay.
Sure enough. All right, 813-239-9663. Tell you what we're going to do. We are going to get this last break taken care of. We got a little bit more of information for you to get in a couple of places or a little place that you might want to go. You never know about this. But we'll be right back. And Susan, Bruce, and looks like Alvaro, you are there, and we will be back with you very, very shortly. Support for WMNF comes from our members and UF Online, providing education to qualified students. As a top 10 public university, online students earn the same degree as their on-campus counterparts. Students can apply by May 6th for fall. UF students don't just log in, they connect.
Hi, this is Angela B. We're back again. The Caribbean Cruise Music Festival will take place at Skipper's Smokehouse, Saturday, March the 23rd. Live bands include Impulse, Renegade, Jafarai, Trinity 7, Sucker Boys, Spy vs. Spy, Terry Edwards and the Latin Jazz Band. For more information, go online to WMNF.org. The doors open at 4 p.m. See you there.
And we're back to the conversation this afternoon, a fairly wide-ranging conversation, as usual here, especially on Mondays when we try and catch up over the 4 days since we all got nice and buckled up on Thursday so that we could survive whatever the weekend gave us. This seemed like a fairly quiet weekend, didn't it? A little something about the budget that if the executive in Congress come to loggerheads. This happens to break right around October 31st, which is also happens to be the deadline for dealing with the debt ceiling. And if we don't deal with the debt ceiling, the United States could go into default. And guess what happens in the world economy if the United States defaults on its debt? Just a little something to think about. 813-239-9663. Good afternoon. Susan, you are in executive session this afternoon.
Hey, thanks. Great program.
Thank you.
I really appreciate your assessment on socialism, communism, Marxism, and capitalism. I'd like to expand on the capitalism.
By all means.
I believe it will be the stockholders that lead the way, and they will have to.
Mm.
We can't have people complaining about big ag, big farm, our banks, and then have a 401k full of them.
Mm.
And people need to take a long, hard look at themselves and their portfolio and see if they're willing to put their money where their mouth is.
Susan, how many folks do you think actually know exactly where their money is invested in their 401k?
I would say a blushingly shameful few. And those are the same people. Hey, I'm all for capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's important. But we can't complain about what corporations do to create good stock returns for their investors and then complain about the same people that are in their portfolio.
Yeah, well, we can't complain about what they do to be profitable and then reap the profits ourselves.
That's so to speak. I'm exactly what I'm talking about. And I would strongly urge when people are engaging in a conversation about capitalism that you look them in the face and say, "Do you know where your money is?"
That's a good question. Do you know? Have you gone into your portfolio of whatever retirement or other investment accounts you have? Have you gone into that portfolio and looked at where your money is? I think it's a good question.
When Monsanto started losing lawsuits, well, first they started getting in trouble and they, converged with Bayer. When Monsanto started getting in trouble, their stocks took a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And bank stocks are taking a hit because people have lost confidence. And as they should have,
Yeah.
So that's my first point on that. If I might add something, please, in regard to Venezuela.
Yeah.
I believe that it's my understanding that there is Soviet and Chinese aid getting into Venezuela, but I believe Maduro is smart enough to realize that our foreign aid is like the foreign aid we send into Syria and many of these other places, it's chock full of weapons to create unrest, and that their first trick in their bag is to cut off the electricity to stir civic unrest and hopefully help initiate a government uprising. It's standard operating procedure. We see it every time we go to overthrow a government.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I have not looked very closely at the exact situation in Venezuela, but I will tell you that we have a long, troublesome record of meddling in South America and Central America, and
globally,
and it would not surprise me at all to discover that our intelligence agencies have been at work there.
Indeed,
you know, and of course when the ever less popular leader of a country says that, it always makes them look like a paranoid bazoot. You know, it's sure. Not me, it's the CIA. Well, if you look around,
it's the CIA.
if you look around, it's probably a well-founded suspicion.
Absolutely. And Trump did say that he would not forcefully bring foreign aid into Venezuela. And I believe that can be translated into, we're not going into Venezuela by force. And I am of the feeling that he wants to be out of Venezuela like he wants to be out of Iraq and Syria and all these other neocon corrupt wars that the CIA has gotten us into. And it's my guess that there's some, based on what he's doing in the Middle East, I believe he's probably got backdoor negotiations with Maduro, and he'll find out who the neocons are in Venezuela. That's just my spin on it. Thank you for the show. Enjoy your afternoon.
Thank you. You too. And we'll talk again, Susan.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. 813-239-9663 as we tiptoe up to the lightning round here on a beautiful Monday afternoon. We're going to talk to Alvaro. Good afternoon, Alvaro. You're in executive session, and you have the floor.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Thank you for the show, and thank you for talking on this topic.
Yeah.
I agree, and I feel very close to what Susan was saying. Yes, definitely. The so-called aid was full of war material, and including nails, wire, gas masks, and other implements used in the very violent revolt that Venezuelans in the opposition are known for.
Alvaro,
yes.
If we wanted to go and look up some place where those things are listed, where could we go and look?
One good place. There are a lot of places, but you can check out France 24, and that's English. In English, it's a French news entity, but in English, this particular report.
Yeah,
you could go Telesur, T-E-L-E. S-U-R.
Yeah, Telesur, yeah.
Yeah, telesurtv.net. They have a lot of very good information. And about the burning of the so-called humanitarian aid,
yeah.
The New York Times just put out a report, you know that. The New York Times. I think Democracy Now! Was talking about it this morning. Where they found that the so-called humanitarian aid had been burnt by the opposition in Venezuela.
Yeah, that was
looking at the videos, I mean, I was looking at the videos while this whole thing was going on. The only ones throwing Molotov cocktails were thugs from the opposition. They were the only ones throwing tons of Molotov.
Because the government troops are a lot better equipped than that, aren't they, Alvaro?
Well, they are, and I think that in that case, it is interesting how the Maduro government is very cautious in all this. You know, the first line of defense were 14 women with no weapons at all. Not even the baton.
Uh-huh.
Not even batons, not even nightsticks.
Yeah.
Just locking arms. 12, and then when people overwhelmed that, you know, the more sluggish people took over from the opposition, then that first line of defense was overwhelmed. And then came the second line of defense, which was essentially just stopping them, and then used tear gas at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the amount of rocks that were throwing, the Colombian police helping them, helping the opposition, standing by, looking as they pass each other the rocks. The bottom, the bridge was over a dry river, a river that had no water going through it,
uh-huh.
And the rocks were massive. And so these people are passing rocks, throwing them over, and then at some point they start throwing Molotov cocktails like crazy.
Wow. See, that's detail that I didn't have. And so there are places like Telesur, and is that Agence France that you were talking about, that the French news agency? That,
no, it's called France 24.
France 24. Okay, good. Thanks, because that'll give people in the community an opportunity to go and look at that stuff and kind of assess for themselves the credibility of the sources and what's being said. And I really appreciate you.
Yes.
I really appreciate you bringing that in
about the blackout. Apparently, the control unit for the electronic control unit for the largest. This like water reservoir. What is it called? Like where they extract electricity.
Uh-huh.
Is the third most powerful in the world. The third most powerful in the world after one in China and one between Brazil and Paraguay.
Uh-huh.
It's the third most powerful in the world. It supplies 80% of the electricity for the country, and it supplies electricity to Brazil and to Colombia also.
So this is a hydroelectric
plant.
Yeah, hydroelectric. Plant. You know, that's pretty amazing that they would have hydroelectrics providing that much of their electricity in a country that's that rich in oil.
Yes. Because of that, it is claimed not by government sources, but it is claimed by other people that what they wanted to do is because this was started like back in the 40s, 50s.
Oh, yeah.
That they wanted to use as much of the oil for revenue. And since they had massive amounts of water, that they could use it to provide electricity for the country.
That makes sense. All right, listen, Alvaro, thanks.
I appreciate you
being in here, giving your time and energy to the station. And always glad to talk with you, and I hope we get to talk again, sir.
Thank you very much.
Sure enough. That is Alvaro Montealegre, who is a mainstay volunteer hereabout that runs the board for various programs and is, like I said, a mainstay volunteer here. So we are going to, let's see, it's a minute, about 2 minutes before we run to the time wall. So I think probably what we're going to do is just let you know that we will be back tomorrow at 6 minutes after one, just following the 1 o'clock NPR news. We don't know exactly yet what we're going to be talking about, but it's, and actually you can suggest topics. If you want to go to the executive session Facebook page, you can actually suggest topics out there. But what you should do, I think, is stay tuned to It's the Music with Flea here, who poses the musical question, what does Keith Richards do when Mick Jagger wants a long vacation? Well, the answer is he got a new band and put out Talk is Cheap 30 years ago. So you can hear a long-lost track from that LP that'll be on the deluxe edition, and that will be on It's the Music Monday at 2 o'clock, just following the 2 o'clock NPR news. And after that, DJ Bobby D is going to get you through the traffic jam later on this afternoon, going to get you home. And, thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting your community radio station. This is the last local radio station in Tampa. And we are live radio. We are your radio. And we are on On the way here. We're going to be on the way, as Mark says, on Tuesday afternoon. And in the meantime,
it has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
This is WMNF Tampa.